Okay, the interactive portion of the program. We will take your calls with Dr. Michael Sala when we return on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Michael Sala with us. We'll take your phone calls as well. Michael, how did you get involved in all of this in the first place?
Well, it was back in 2001 with Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project press conference that just opened my eyes to this. It was like it was almost like a button was pushed. Up until that time, I was a pretty conventional academic. I was an assistant professor at American University, and it was almost like the button was pushed, and I just couldn't get enough of finding out whatever was going on with this whole ET question, and the things that I was doing previously at the university just didn't make any more sense. So it meant that ultimately there was a transition, and I'm enjoying what I'm doing now, even though it hasn't been always that easy to leave a kind of paid professional career to live on the bleeding edge. But there are benefits.
They weren't too happy at the American University that you were involved in this.
No, right? No, they weren't. At first, they told me, well, as long as you keep this kind of quiet, then we can live with it. Just don't involve us. And so for a couple of years, it was okay like that, and I was able to do my research and try and combine it with my academic interests. But then in 2004, there was a story written by Peter Carlson in the Washington Post that made the front page of the Style section, and basically talked about the research I was doing on President Eisenhower having met with extraterrestrials, and the university was not very happy, and I was basically told that I needed to leave at the end of my academic appointment.
To the phones we now go. We'll go to Denver, Colorado. Whaleheart is with us on the Wildcard Line. Hi there.
Oh, hi, George. Hey, Michael, I wanted to take you back to the first of your conversation tonight when you discussed the dolphins and whales. I've been doing light worker work for 27 years. I work with ETs, dolphins and whales, angels, you name it. I work with the higher realms. And I wanted to share with you that I was guided to go to SeaWorld of San Diego. And I was there, I worked for them for 2.5 to 3 years. And their top curator at the time, his name was Jim Antrim. And I literally, I told him how telepathic the dolphins and whales were. So I spent all those years having, proving and having examples to take to him. You know, I just let the dolphins and whales know in the park that I'm here and we're going to prove this. And we did. And the things that happened were phenomenal. And the Jim Antrim didn't know what to do with my research because it was so mind-boggling that we also tapped into the Navy people, and the person in charge of the cetacean program in the Navy in San Diego was Les Bevins, and we had meetings together. And just to back up what you say, the dolphins and whales are the people of the water, and the Navy knows this. From the meeting I had with these people, they brought in a Navy-paid parapsychologist to the meeting, and they said, we would not be wasting our time and our money being paid, you know, to come to this meeting if we did not believe in what you do and what you're telling us. So the Navy knew how telepathic the dolphins and whales were, and I don't know if they understand what a high level of intelligence they are. They are equivalent to the humans on the land. They are the people of the water. And it is cannibalistic to eat them. And that's why a lot of us dolphin and whale people are trying to get, you know, the killings stopped, because it is cannibalistic. But anyway, I wanted to back you up with the American people because of the research I've done. I've been in this for 27 years. The dolphins and whales taught me a lot of my abilities. They opened up my telepathic, my clairvoyant, my clairaudient abilities. They worked with me like... the things that happen at SeaWorld, I'm a very skeptical person about what I do. And they were teaching me stuff, and it blew me away. I thought, oh, my God, did that just happen? And so I got to give them example after example after example, and they just didn't know what to do with the research. They didn't know what to do because it was so amazing. So I just wanted to let you know about that.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. It was great feedback. Go ahead, Michael.
Yes, well, some of the interesting things about dolphins and whales is that they are non-terrestrials. In a way, they're kind of like a bridge to that extraterrestrial consciousness. And as Wildheart was saying, that these are incredibly telepathic beings, and people who do have that kind of gift and have developed telepathic communications with dolphins have said that they do work with extraterrestrials themselves. And one of the things that I certainly encourage the listeners to do, if they haven't tried it, is to swim, take a swim with wild dolphins. Just go out there, and it really is, to my mind, the closest experience anyone will ever come to having contact with extraterrestrials, other than meeting extraterrestrials themselves or going on their ships, because when you're in that water, you're in a non-familiar environment, you know, you're wearing snorkel equipment and so forth, and these beings, these dolphins come around you, and they just are so fast in the water, and they can just move so quickly around you, but yet they seem to be communicating with you, and there are so many benefits for doing it. You know, people have telepathic communications, people experience healings with dolphins, there's so much science there, and certainly the idea that that dolphins would be a legitimate representative of the planet Earth, I think is something worth considering from the perspective of extraterrestrial visitors, because they would see them as being incredibly intelligent, and that along with the whales, that they roam kind of 70% of the Earth, as opposed to us terrestrial humans.
Let's go to Dana, Grand Rapids, Michigan, first-time caller. Go ahead, Dana.
Hi. I want to start telling you that, first of all, I'm a Catholic, and I am devout, but not so, I don't want to say not so devout, I'm closed-minded. I don't believe devout Catholics are closed-minded. I, most of my life, believe that people who believed or said they were abducted, what have you, had interactions, that they were kooks. And the one thing I noticed over the years, and I've listened, not...
Where'd you go? Well, lost another one. We've got some problems up there these days. Wonder if we're getting some sunspots, Michael.
Oh, who knows?
Anything going on up there? I mean, we lost you and a couple other callers earlier. Let's go to Buck in Moundsville, West Virginia. Hey, Buck, welcome to the show.
Thanks for taking my call, George. You know, with that lady talking about people considered kooks, about, what was it, 3 years ago, there was a bevy of Russian spies that were deported that had been here for many years, soccer moms, soccer dads, et cetera, I think in Jersey and Yonkers, et cetera. If they could, you know, interact and not become exposed or whatever, or even cause any consideration or expect anybody to think that they were anything other than quote normal people, why then would these debunkers think that ETs couldn't do the very same thing, and much easily, I might add?
Well, thanks for that, Brock, and there is a kind of Russian segue there. The Prime Minister of Russia, the current Prime Minister, Dmitry Medvedev, actually said in December of 2012, in off-air comments to a reporter after giving a television interview, that along with the folder containing Russia's nuclear codes and secrets, Russian presidents are also given a folder about extraterrestrials among us. And in there, there's information about a super-secret agency that is created, that has been created to monitor the extraterrestrials living among us. So there you have the Russian Prime Minister admitting in off-air comments that indeed we do have ETs among us, and that they have kind of integrated into society very easily, and that they are being monitored. So that's the kind of confirmation of the friendship case that I spoke about earlier, and also that kind of confirmation of the point you were making about the Russian spies living here, that yes, ETs could be doing it, well, are doing the same thing.
Let's go to Gail in Statesville, North Carolina. Hi, Gail, go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. Doctor, last August 2012, there was an incident on the West Coast between the Chinese Navy butting up with the U.S. Navy and having an actual firefight with ETs under the water. This has not been brought to light since. My husband happened to meet a chief petty officer that was newly retired in Daytona, Florida, and they actually discussed this because he was there and he confirmed it. And I'm kind of curious about why we have not heard anything. And number two is this something that Admiral Burr had run into in the South Pole and he was told to stifle it or it would ruin his career? And it did, because we heard nothing else more about that either.
Well, that's very interesting. What you're referring to was something that was put out by Gordon Duff from Veterans Today. He had received some intelligence reports from people in Asia that, in fact, that there was an ongoing UFO war there in the Pacific off the San Francisco coast. And then,
amazing story, wasn't it, Michael?
It was. It was. It was something I covered as well. And Gordon Duff was saying that this was unfolding, that there was a very hot war going on there or in the Pacific. And it was kind of eerily like the film Battleship that came out during the summer of last year. So it was kind of like almost as though someone knew that this was about to be happening, and so Battleship was to kind of prepare us for it. But whatever was going on there seems to have subsided quite a bit. Gordon Duff hasn't spoken about it much recently. So I think like many conflicts that sometimes go hot, saner heads prevail, and whatever issues that were unresolved, that they've probably reached some kind of agreement, some negotiation. So it's just, again, just another example of just how important it is to kind of understand how our diplomatic toolbox needs to be used when it comes to the ET issue.
Rick in New York, you're up with us. Hi, Rick. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, George. Great interview. I really like it. How do you pronounce the doctor's last name?
Michael Sala.
Yeah, Dr. Sala, I was wondering if you could substantiate something for me. I've always been interested ever since the days of Inside the Spaceships with a guy who went to Venus, who you mentioned a couple of times in the early 50s. I heard a story way back about Eisenhower meeting with aliens, and at that time I started looking into it for a good 10 years now, and I heard this one story, and I was wondering if you could substantiate it at all. I don't know about a second meeting, but supposedly he was in Palm Springs in, I think it was 1954, and he disappeared for a short period of time. He said he was whisked off to a dentist appointment, and that he went to Edwards Air Force Base, and a deal was made there between there were aliens supposedly at Edwards that had requested specifically his presence, and they made some sort of a treaty in which there would be an exchange between the United States and the aliens. What we would get is high technology. What the aliens would get was a certain ability to take certain human beings from this planet, particularly women and children, for experimental purposes, not to return, not like the kind I was abducted once. I abducted. They're taken, and supposedly they're taken to a place in New Mexico. Now, what I found out about that place in New Mexico is I spoke to somebody who had worked supposedly on the excavation of this place. It was in Dulce, New Mexico, underneath, I think it's called the Achalota Mesa or something like that. Supposedly it's a base that's 2 miles underground. And he said that they took out the Army Corps of Engineers or wherever he was working with. I forget he was in the service. He was doing something with that. And he said that they hollowed out 3 cubic miles of area, 2 miles under the ground. And there was a 7-story structure built there. And supposedly, that's where we get high technology. If you look at the spurt in technology from 1960 onward, I think it's unrivaled in human history before that. I think we had a little help. I think we got that and we gave them our people. Have you ever heard of anything like this?
Well, I did actually talk a little bit about that earlier in the show, about the Eisenhower meetings, that there were two, one in 54 in February and one in 55, again in February, but this one was held at, the second one was held at Holloman Air Force Base. With the first one, I think the key there was that it was held on the night of, early morning of February 20, and that on March 1st, so we're talking, 9 days later, you had the Bravo test, which was the biggest ever hydrogen bomb test in the United States. So I think there was a very clear connection between the meeting and the Bravo test. Personally, I think it was a meeting involving the human-looking extraterrestrials that were there to plead with President Eisenhower not to go ahead with the nuclear weapons program and to basically abort the hydrogen bomb tests. And I think Eisenhower was very sympathetic to that approach and actually did try earlier in his plans. His appealed at the United Nations in 1953. He proposed actually putting the control of all nuclear weapons in the hands and in the control of the United Nations, but the Soviet Union said no. So I think at that meeting in February 20, essentially that was one final attempt by the extraterrestrials to really stop the United States and the rest of the planet going down this dangerous track of developing thermonuclear weapons, and Eisenhower was overruled. And then in 1955 at Holloman Air Force Base, I think that's when the agreement was reached for these advanced technologies that that you were mentioning that were exchanged.
Let's go to John Parkland, Washington. Hey, John, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
I was a flight engineer in a rescue outfit at March Air Force Base, and I was paired up with a retired flight engineer. They gave up one day's retirement for one day's active duty pay because we were so short a panel of flight engineers. And I was over in Hawaii for 2 months while they were ferrying airplanes to Vietnam and so forth. They were filming Tor, Tor, Tor at the same time. So I got to see the reenactment from the flight line at Hickam Air Force Base. But this guy was the flight engineer on Columbine 1 and Columbine 2. And so I got to hear a lot of stories that nobody ever heard. And the president would fly with the Secretary of Defense, and the Secretary of Defense used to sit on a step in the cockpit on a cushion because he didn't like sitting back in the back with Mamie Eisenhower or his wife. And so here's this flight engineer talking with the Secretary of Defense. He's right at his elbow. And when he'd go out there to Palm Springs, just like your previous caller said, he would go out there, he'd get in his aero commander. He was a pilot, but he didn't have a current physical because he had a heart condition, like we all found out later. And he'd fly up to Edwards, and he'd meet with these aliens this one time. It's pretty much like the Behold the Pale Horse, I think was the name of the book.
Bill Cooper.
There was an orange man, there was a large gray, there was a small gray. There was a blue man, Mr. Molester, and there was a reptilian man. They feel he's the animal mutilator. And there was people from what they called Ashtar Command. And they have a great big huge base on the backside of the moon. And when the Apollo 8, I think, was the first one that went back behind the moon, when they came out, it was around Christmas time, and remember when they reestablished radio contact, first words out of his mouth were, "There is a Santa Claus." Those were code words for "there is a base on the backside of the moon." And they have these gigantic spaceships, like the one that harassed that JAL freighter up in Alaska one time. They have a whole fleet of them, and they're going to take us off the planet if we have the right vibrations, whatever that means. And they also had Randolph Hearst and I think the Archbishop of Los Angeles that went to meet these aliens. And he came out, the Archbishop came out crying because these people told him there was no such thing as the God that we know.
Well, yeah, they did. I want you to react to this, Michael, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, Stephen Meyer joins us. Darwin's Doubt, fascinating story about Darwin and maybe intelligent design. When we come back in a moment with our friend, Dr. Michael Sala, final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Dr. Michael Sala with us. Final phone calls, of course, here on Coast to Coast. Michael, by the way, you do a splendid job. I'm so glad we've got people like you out there doing this kind of research.
Well, thank you, George. It's for me, it's just fascinating. It changed my life when I found out about it in 2001. I just couldn't live the way I was living before in terms of the information I had. So it's really a fascinating journey.
All right, to the phones we go. Gary in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
No, George, I love your show. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
I learned so much from your show. I just thank you for everything you guys do. I want to ask you, I guess, two quick questions. One, how long do you think the Vatican is going to wait to make that announcement? I know you have another show about the Vatican ET connection where your other guest said you predict it would be this year or next year. And also, what do you think about the, I want to know about the relationship between the aliens, like which ones do you think like are the good ones, are bad ones, or like which ones are fighting, or, I mean, I heard this galactic war, or this, maybe this, these ships like shooting at each other in space, like which one, like, do you think is actually like, you know, fighting each other, like who do you think like shutting down these nuclear weapon sites all over the world, and I'll take my answer off the line. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Well, it's hard to predict exactly how long it'll be before the Vatican is going to announce anything on this issue. We do know that they have a new Pope, Francis, who seems to be cleaning things up there, and he has been kind of making some statements about some of the things in the Vatican that need to be changed. But I think once he's kind of made some progress there, then he can move on this other issue. So I wouldn't be surprised within the next year that once Pope Francis has done whatever house cleaning is necessary, and by house cleaning I mean kind of dealing with those factions within the Catholic Church that have been opposed to disclosure, and kind of allowing the faction led by the Jesuits that has been kind of more pro-disclosure to get influence and eventually move forward. So I think within a year we might expect something to happen. As far as the aliens that are fighting, I don't question that some of the aliens are fighting behind the scenes, kind of these low intensity conflicts that occasionally break out in ways that the media learns, like we had with Veterans Today, Gordon Duff reporting about what was happening off the coast of San Francisco. And I think it would be essentially between that faction of aliens that is working with the secret government in these alien technology programs, and those extraterrestrials that are really wanting to help humanity evolve and try and disclose the truth of what's happening, that they definitely have been having conflicts.
Let's go to Nacogdoches, Texas. Elaine is with us east of the Rockies. Hi, Elaine. Go ahead.
Hey, George and Dr. Sulla.
Hi.
I just wanted to share an experience, a close encounter that my son and I had down here back in 93. And three of these ships, flying saucers or whatever they're called, came across our pasture and hovered over the corral. And my son and I went outside, and we were just standing there looking up at them, and they were like at tree level, you know, like maybe 15 feet off the ground. And there were three of them, and they seemed to be a little bit different, each one, but they weren't very big. And they made a sound like vroom, 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 kind of a roaring kind of a sound. And so they left, and about 45 minutes later, they came back, and we could hear them coming. They came over the pasture, over the house, stood there, and they did that all night until about midnight, and they must have telepathically told me they were leaving, because I told my son, they're leaving. Let's call our neighbors, because they were watching TV. We call the neighbors. She comes outside, and we were walking out to the road, and they followed us to the middle of the farm market road, and the neighbors come out and stood there and looked at them, and another ship came from the north, and they all went east, and we never saw them again.
That's a great story.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for sharing that, Elaine.
And they weren't helicopters, that's for sure.
Well, it doesn't sound like they were helicopters, and that's an example of how contact happens with a lot of these kind of more benign or positive ET groups, that it's just a sighting that people see, and because of the nature of these events, it really is very profound for many people, and it changes their lives. So people who have that kind of sightings that Elaine experienced, I mean, all of a sudden
They know that there's something greater out there that has these capabilities that's beyond our modern technology, and so they begin to change as well. So I think that's kind of part of the long-term strategy of raising consciousness. And I think another good example of that strategy is crop circles. I mean, all of those incredible crop circles that have these beautiful geometric designs that help raise human awareness. Again, that's just another way in which the kind of more positive ET groups are trying to raise consciousness so that we eventually will be ready to kind of embrace and move into a galactic citizenship.
How long do you think it's going to take us to really realize, Michael, what's going on and disclosure is right around the corner?
Well, I think it's always been about consciousness. It's always been about how humanity has evolved or is evolving to the point where we can embrace an extraterrestrial reality without kind of collapsing into fighting factions. I mean, that's really been the key. You know, at what point are we going to be ready for this? Because I think part of the long-term strategy has been to kind of ensure that those factions, like the secret government that has been basically monopolizing this information, that they don't triumph or they don't succeed in poisoning the minds of people so that when the genuine or when the friendly ETs show up, all of a sudden people say, oh my God, they're going to invade us and let's start shooting at them. That's the last thing they want. But of course, to prevent that, they really need to raise consciousness. So people need to be aware that there's more than one faction of ETs here, that the ones that have our best interests at heart, that they've been working behind the scenes to help us prepare. And I think we are definitely moving far along that track, and certainly it won't be too long before humanity is ready to embrace this greater reality.
Let's go to Dana, Grand Rapids, Michigan. We got her back here. Hi, Dana. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. I'm so sorry. Everybody thought I was calling people kooks. I told you I was a Catholic because as Christians, we believe that we're made in God's image and likeness. So I knew that whatever these people experienced had to be so extraordinary because of either the terror that it instilled in them afterwards, after their close encounter, or the awe, the openness. That just doesn't come from nowhere. So in order to understand that and still maintain my faith and my belief in God, I had to ask myself why, what would be the purpose? And so I don't listen to the show often because it's on from 1 to 5 a.m., but when I do, I've heard many guests that you've had, George, as well as Dr. Michael, and I also caught, I just happened to be up all night last week when you had L.A. Mazzulli on, yeah. And he believes that these are the fallen angels. Now, from the most uneducated child all the way to some of our most brilliant scientists in the world, the one thing that we're grasping so much for the $64,000 question to be answered, is there other life? And how would the Antichrist be able, because if you believe in God and believe in revelation, most people are going to follow the Antichrist, and they're going to walk away from their faith in God. And so it has to be something so extraordinary. And then Mazzulli was talking about his theory on the Nephilim, that they're the fallen angels that are doing battle, and that they're using these aliens as hosts. And so that we would follow them. Then you talked about that gentleman from Colombia who was taken to the Andes, Dr. Michael, and he saw a Christ-like figure. Now, this is my theory. We're all on the edge of our seat, maybe not me. I'm actually afraid of them. Don't want to have any kind of encounters. But what would be more, what would draw someone in more than to find out, yes, there is other life and they're here to help us, and then we all get sucked in. Then you had a couple callers ago that said Santa Claus is real and that they had an encounter with someone and with one of these beings and said that the Christ we believe in, the God we believe in is not true. Do you see where I'm putting this all together, the theory that they're going to tell us? And this is the job of the Antichrist. We're going to, not we, I hope
I leave myself out of that.
Well, let's get Michael's take on this. Again, like L.A. Marzulli, that these are demons, demonic forces, Michael. You and I believe that they're coming from planetary systems, but I'll let you react to that.
Yes, it's interesting just how many people actually do kind of buy into that idea that extraterrestrials are these kind of fallen angels, kind of like beings that have this kind of depraved consciousness. And I think that's really just so incomplete, that perspective, that this incredible phenomenon that spans so many types of experiences with literally thousands of people that have had contact experiences, that you would categorize all of that as just being one kind of demonic presence. It's kind of like it's hard to fathom that people would kind of like ignore the more positive experiences that have been happening. But I do notice that it's very interesting that you do tend to have a lot of evangelical Christians quoting the book of Revelations and saying it's, you know, the return of the Antichrist. It's going to be that extraterrestrials will essentially be the vehicle by through which this Antichrist appears. And yet, on the other hand, you have the Catholic Church talking about extraterrestrials in a kind of much more scientific way, in terms of, well, you know, they are much more highly advanced than us technologically, and so they probably are ethically more advanced as well, and that we can welcome them as our brothers. And so the Catholic Church has a much more upbeat approach. So I think they're closer to the truth, but certainly we can't just say that extraterrestrials are totally good or demonic. I mean, there's nuances here, and there's a spectrum of them, just as there's a spectrum of humans that are kind of really beautiful, enlightened beings, and those that are really depraved criminals.
Let's go to Hermosa Beach in California. Michael Brandon's with us. Hi, Brandon. Thank you.
How's it going?
Good.
Hey, I was such a fan. I wanted to ask real quick. I heard the doc talking about the vibrations of he's talking about the reptilians and the blue men and the vibrations, and then they're going to launch an attack? Or do you think that's a vibration that humans are giving off, or is that like a vibration of the earth, like Yosemite will explode and they'll use that as a way to attack us or something?
Okay, Brandon, I'm not quite sure what you mean by the vibration that's attracting the reptilians, or attracting a possibility of an attack. But I do know that essentially that the Earth has had visitation for many thousands of years. And I think to get a kind of deeper understanding of what's happening on our planet, we've got to really differentiate between the extraterrestrials that intervened thousands of years ago and basically formed the ruling bloodlines, and the kind of Illuminati families that have been setting the scene from being controlling things from behind the scenes, and the visiting extraterrestrials that have come now, you know, whether we're talking about Greys or we're talking about reptilians or we're talking about the Ashtar Command and kind of more enlightened Venusians and so forth, that, you know, there are different factions. They all have their own agendas. And certainly some agendas that create war and to create negativity, and I think maybe that the kind of negative vibration you were talking about, certainly some are doing that, and it's others that are trying to raise consciousness and produce a positive vibration, and ultimately it comes down to us, comes down to humanity. You know, what do we choose? What do we embrace? Do we embrace a kind of vision, a caricature of visiting extraterrestrials as demons about to attack us, so then we just kind of let loose the military onto them? Or do we view them as kind of these returning brothers, that they're our cosmic family, and that they're going to introduce us to this incredible journey to galactic citizenship?
Let's go to Edward in Wyckoff, New Jersey. Good morning, Edward. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you. First, I have a comment. In the Old Testament, I think it's in 1 Samuel, there is a narrative about how Elijah was taken up into heaven in a fiery object to appear to be a UFO.
Good point.
And the witness of this event gives this comment, "Behold, the chariots of Israel," seem to suggest that the origins of Israel, whoever they are, whoever they really are, had an extraterrestrial origin. That they are not the Jews of today is documented in the book The 13th Tribe by Arthur Kessler, who explains that the Jews of today were actually conduits from another uh, another national group in Russia. I wonder if that has ever come to you, and which leads to my next question. Why is it that among the extraterrestrial groups, we rarely hear anything about the Nordics? They're rarely mentioned. They have never been cited as doing anything harmful. They seem to have had a constructive purpose, but they, whenever there's discussion of the extraterrestrials, the Nordics are usually omitted. Can you explain this, and do you have any special knowledge of this?
Thanks, Ed. Well, yes, that's a really good point, that the Nordics, descriptions of these human-looking extraterrestrials that have been described as friendly by many contactees, that has been systematically ignored. And I don't think it is accidental. I think that there's a design, or that there's an agenda playing out here that kind of manipulates UFO researchers towards studying one aspect of the phenomenon, which is more the abduction aspect, more the kind of negative, gray, reptilian-type abductions, and ignoring the stories of the contactees of people who have been meeting with these friendly, human-looking Nordics and others like them. And I think it's because those that are in control realize that you can manipulate people through fear. You can't manipulate people through hope. You know, if you give people hope of a better future, then you're going to lose control. But if you make them fearful of a terrible future, then you can maximize your control. And I think that's why all of these stories about negative ETs are so pervasive, they're so dominant. Not that it doesn't happen, but I think just the fact that everything else is kind of eclipsed, that we don't get the stories of the positive human Nordic-looking ETs that have been helping us, to me is a sign that, there's an agenda here to kind of make us fearful, make us kind of move away from embracing the extraterrestrial reality so that we can be in a place that can be easily manipulated.
Well, you know what? That's all a great case here, Michael, and we're wrapping things up. Would you tell us where we can get your book, Galactic Diplomacy?
Sure, George. Yes, well, people can get it from my website, exopolitics.org, if they want to get an autograph copy. Otherwise, they can just go to amazon.com, and it's available there in both the paperback and the Kindle version.
Okay, very good. Michael Sala, and again, any trips coming up for you? We're going to see you anywhere?
We're going to be meeting in Joshua Tree at the Desert Contact in the Desert Conference in August.
You'll be there, and that'll
be good to meet. And I'll be talking about my recent trip to Peru and experiences in Mount Shasta to kind of find out more about these enlightened extraterrestrials.
Super. Until then, my friend, you be well. Michael Sala on Coast to Coast AM. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lone Hood, Sean Laudasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.